Welcome to Rake the Moon, episode 22. Can you hear the cogs starting to grind? First pre-season friendly is almost upon us. There's the luxury of a foreign training camp and a manager planning his players' every move with almost sadistic glee. We have new signings, at least one a man of virtue and trialist too, and the trust delivers on the debentures that are no longer held over the counting ground. We'll test out the state of play, all on Rake the Moon this week. But first, of course, the banter section. I'm going to keep this quite football, Sam, because the early weeks of pre-season are always the time for trialists, and it never ceases to amaze me the speed at which the internet can identify footballers with minimal CVs, often on occasions. I'm just wondering, either in your reporting or watching time, do you have a favourite trialist tale you like to trot out?
Favourite trialist tales. I don't know, we see a lot come and go, don't we, in the lower leagues. And everyone always gets really excited about trialists when in reality, almost none of them end up sticking around for longer than a week or two. As such, it's quite hard to form personal attachments to trialists and so on. I think it was very interesting during the Di Canio years, just how many different people were popping up during pre-season and then never to be seen of again. Some even getting contracts and then never to be seen of again. But in terms of having an actual favourite trialist story, there isn't one that's going to come to me immediately, I don't think. I find it all really quite inconsequential. Sorry to put a bit of a dampener on it.
No, I understand what you're saying. That you do roll the dice and they very rarely get a contract. And then I suppose my mind goes back to Thomas DeSavian. Even when they look good and get a contract, there's no guarantee that they'll actually suddenly perform once the paper is signed and all that. So they do almost seem like a bit of fun, though. It's a deadly serious business for them, especially the ones on the edge, I suppose, who are trying to see if they can either break their way in or hang on grimly into their place in the professional game. So having done that light bit of banter to cheer everyone up, let's start digging into pre-season. So since the last episode, Swindon have acquired three new players, two defenders, Stefan Negru, signed from a club up the A420, but he's generally been around in loans in League Two quite a lot. James DeBio, brought in on loan from Hull, who you'd have done exceptionally well to see play, given he's made two very brief substitute appearances for Leeds. But you're more likely to have bumped into Matt Virtue for Fleetwood against Swindon for the past couple of seasons, a midfielder with a decent eye for goal, certainly a couple of campaigns ago, and an interesting sort of mix of styles and age ranges there. Sam, what's your initial thoughts on the recruitment as it stands?
Mostly it's kind of filled the age and player profile that we expected, i.e. 23 to 29 years old with EFL experience, relatively physical, big running numbers. You can evidently see that there is going to be an emphasis on fast press, high press, physicality, and trying to make Swindon more robust defensively, in which it leads to not being a particularly sexy transfer window. You know, there's not a massive need for attackers in this current situation, given the number that are on the books already. And while I expect them to get a winger of some sort during the summer, I don't think there's going to be much else that comes in that area, unless anyone goes out, of course. So it's all kind of followed the expected trajectory of the window so far, particularly the first three. They're all have established themselves to one degree or another within the bottom two tiers of the EFL. And they seem to be players who get their heads down and who work hard. And they seem to be generally respected by the fan bases of the clubs that they've been at. So I think it makes sense, even if it's not particularly thrilling. But I don't think this summer was ever going to be thrilling from a transfer perspective for a couple of reasons. One, Swindon are only operating in the free agent market. They're not going to be going and paying a fee for somebody else. And so you are limited by who is actually available. And the free agent market has been generally a little bit slow this summer anyway. And secondly, they only need this sort of type of player. They don't need to go and get any flair or a great deal of flair. So not particularly surprised. I am really interested in DeBeo and to see how he goes. Speaking to a couple of people up at Leeds who've watched him in the academy over 4 or 5 years, and they speak of a player who has flashes of real class and quality but can be quite inconsistent. They talk about a ball-playing centre-back, maybe not necessarily as physical as his profile would suggest, but still very capable on the ball, prone to the odd error. I think this will just be an acid test of men's football for him to see how he goes. He's obviously been in a successful Leeds academy side at under-21 level, and I'm really interested to see what happens there.
I'd assume there's been a bit of a link up with Joe Snowden in the past as well, which might help. So I carry on.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's important to note that Swindon have been relatively successful with the identification of young players, either on permanence or loans, over the last year or so. There haven't been many duds within there, whereas some of the signings of more experience have obviously not gone as well as they would like. So I think that is one area where, not just with Snowden, but with Fletcher Holman, with Phil Mbete, with Jamie Knight-Labelle, with Tom Wilson-Brown as well. And these are examples of players of similar profiles that have been picked to do a job and have done it pretty well for Swindon. So I think that we should back the recruitment on that side and give him a go. I think that they've done a good job in the sort of the minutiae of the agreement, whereby if he plays a certain percentage of minutes over the course of the first half of the season, then there won't be a return or recall clause in January. Basically, it means if he does well for Swindon, then Swindon will be able to hold on to him for the second half of the season. I think that's kind of important. I think there was a similar clause there for Prince Wilhelm Bachmann last year, but obviously he didn't play as much as had been anticipated originally. But it's good planning in that respect. It'll be interesting to see where he's used as well, because central defensive options, having been very thin on the ground, are now pretty decent. And I know for a fact that some within the club see DeBeo as an option as a six as much as he is as a centre half. So there is the possibility there that he could be brought into holding midfield in certain circumstances, either alongside Gavin Kilkenny or instead of Gavin Kilkenny. And again, that's versatility that Holloway craves. So I think solid business so far. We haven't seen a lot of them play, obviously, but speaking to people who have, they all talk of players who are eminently capable, and it will be a case of whether they can gel together in a team. I don't know, what about you? Do you ever get excited by transfer windows at this level? I find it's quite difficult. You're never really going to get that much of a glamour signing.
I guess the problem is either it's players who sort of know the level quite well, who feel quite sort of exposed, or you're fairly unlikely to have seen the loanees almost anywhere, I think, because it often leads to the sort of first loan, I suppose. So I do remember Virtue being quite tidy for Fleetwood a couple of seasons ago. One more thing on Negru and Dubai. I think Negru can play a little bit, or likes to play on the ground, as well as being reasonably robust from what I recall. So do you suspect there might be the option to play out a bit more from the back than maybe we suspect is likely?
Well, I think having lost Will Wright, or chosen to release Will Wright, they needed players that had that ability with ball at feet. And it would make sense that they can give themselves the option to either be direct or to be a little bit more intricate if they want. We know Mbete as well can pick a pass out of defence. And I think that's the lesser of the importance scale for Holloway. I think he wants defenders who can defend primarily. He's already started calling out the defensive record from last season, which was objectively pretty poor. And I think that will be the focus. However, I think you're right. There are there are ball-playing attributes of both Negru and Debeo, which would complement Tafazoli because, you know, I think Tafazoli would readily admit that he is not a ball-playing centre-back. However, if you have a ball-playing centre-back and a fast one-on-one covering centre-back playing alongside Tafazoli, then that sort of makes sense as a combination. So, I think that that's definitely an extra part of the positives. However, I think they really are just looking for robustness more than anything else in the first instance.
And a word on Matt Virtue, and I had a word with him earlier this week. You sort of talked about being a box-to-box midfielder. I think one that will run and perhaps look to, you know, try and get on the end of things in the penalty area, which all sounds quite Ollie Clark. So having a kind of, I won't say cover for Clark, because that might undersell his role a bit, but having someone else of that ilk feels quite an important move to, or important sort of player to bring in.
Yeah, I agree. And I think they do see him in the same profile as Clark in being able to crash the box late and contribute goals. And he does have a record for scoring goals. And that's really useful. You know, you want to have people who can pop up and contribute from further back in the team rather than relying on your forwards. It will be interesting to see whether in time Clark and Virtue play together, or whether this is very much Virtue is here in case Ollie Clark is either injured, suspended, or if he's playing in defence. I think a lot of Swindon fans will hope that he doesn't need to play as the left-sided centre-half or the central centre-half at any point during the course of the season. But if he does, Virtue has got a lot of the characteristics that Clark has. And energy in midfield will be really important to keep the thing buzzing. It was a big factor in the sort of slovenly nature of the spring that midfield just wasn't buzzing like it was buzzing in the first half of the season. I don't think you can necessarily put that down to Clark being absent, but it certainly doesn't help when you're missing your captain and the guy who does have the energy to do that high press for long periods of time. I think that Virtue will add that. That'll be useful. Be interesting to see where Ben Middlemass fits into. And they obviously rate him quite highly, and he's another player that can advance with ball at feet. If they're playing two eights, will it be Virtue and Clark? Will it be Clark and Middlemass? It'd be interesting to see where that develops over time. And then obviously there's the lingering reminder that there's still two other players regarded as midfield options in Tom Nichols and James Ball also hanging around too. So there's a variety there, and we shouldn't write off those other players just because they might not have particularly impressed second half of last season. That Nichols was decent first half of last season. Ball never settled through injuries. If they don't find a move elsewhere during the summer, then they're not bad additional options to have. So yeah, it makes sense, again, what they're putting together, but we have to wait and see as to whether it works as a unit.
And finally, a little bit on trialists, because we discovered yesterday there are some in the building. You did name a winger for Moonraker subscribers earlier in the week. So what would you like to put on the table about these trialists, whose odds of getting a contract, as we know, are slim, but they will be, no doubt, busting a gut?
Yeah, I've got identity of two. I think there are at least four, and there might be more that end up being part of the group at Supermarine as Holloway looks to make two 11s for the two halves on Saturday. One is a guy called Favour Onokwuli. He's a winger, most recently at Sheffield Wednesday. He's 20, 21 years old, plays off the left side, and I have never seen him play, but from a profile perspective, it kind of fits to have a look at a player that might work in that area. Again, they are looking for a winger, and they have been frustrated in their pursuit of their primary target so far on the wing. And it doesn't look like that one's going to land. So they'll keep looking. And this is another chance to run an eye over a guy who has been in a championship pathway for a number of years without really making a breakthrough. He's played 20 minutes in the championship for Sheffield Wednesday. So that'll be an interesting one. They've also got Marley Rose back, who was on trial last summer as well and spent last season at Taunton Town after being released by Bristol City. I'm not sure that will come to anything. And there are another couple of players who I believe are out of non-league that are on trial as well currently, and there may well be more. This is the time of year when players can suddenly pop up out of nowhere for a few days as agents try and work favours to get people into different clubs. So until you see any of them play, you don't have a clue whether or not they're worthwhile looking at. It's just a part and parcel of pre-season that trialists are there looking for clubs. Clubs will do favours for certain agents to be able to give them a showcase for a little bit, and if they impress them, then they'll have the opportunity to win a contract. But as we've already mentioned at the top of the show, I'm always a bit sceptical about putting a lot of emphasis on trialists. As much as I know readers and listeners love to hear about them, that they come and they go very, very quickly. So it's not worth attaching too much until you find that one's been around for several weeks and is really pushing for a contract.
The more exotic CVs, please, the better. So the players are now back, starting to labour their way through pre-season in the heat. Of course, they will be in Spain next week with Ian Holloway taking great delight in the fact he has pretty much control of their lives if he wants from dawn to dusk. I think when we caught up with him for the first time in pre-season, that was on Thursday. So it is all kind of starting to unfold. And clearly, the manager is putting quite a lot of store in the fact that he is going to get a week to really drill the players, whether it's physically or into the ideas that he really wants to use to hopefully propel them to a successful campaign.
Yeah, it's going to be a pretty difficult week for the players, I think, by the sounds of it. Training three times a day, up at six, do something early, do something later on in the afternoon, do something in the heat of the afternoon sun as well. I think there's going to be a big workload, which is understandable, and it's an opportunity for him to really bring a group together. I don't envy them at all. We're going to have perfectly nice 27, 28 degrees over here, and they're going to be running around up hills and pushing themselves to limits in 38 to 40 degrees. So I'm very comfortable sitting back here in Wiltshire during that period. But it is a useful exercise to get a group of players together for a period like that. There is always going to be a question of whether it needs to be in Spain in terms of budget stuff. But, it's not going to be the most expensive trip in the world. And I'm sure that it will do them some good. It was interesting to hear him talk about the friendly that, the friendly that they have arranged at the moment against the local club, Costa City, which he doesn't seem to really want, and suggested that they might scrap it and play an intra-squad thing instead. There is a lot of them at the moment of matches in this pre-season schedule. I don't know what you think about this, Andrew, but it does seem to be quite a lot going on in terms of midweek to weekend to midweek to weekend. And I don't know whether or not this is a good thing in pre-season, but it did strike me as just being quite match heavy. Am I overreacting to that?
Possibly not. No, I almost wonder whether trying to get a match in that week was, maybe not exactly a sop to anyone who wanted to come over and see a game and have a bit of something like that. But I'm not sure that seemed the main, purpose of the project, to go out there and get a couple of games, is it? It's very much to make them sweat and make them think as well. And they do have quite a good range of tests, I think, as we were kind of touching on last week. There's Bristol City in there, the Crystal Palace in there, albeit behind closed doors. I think a game next week, especially with this sort of Supermarine one super early, is not necessarily top of their list of requirements. We did discover yesterday that Danny Butterworth is going to be going on the trip along with Harry Smith as well, which might be an indication that he has some sort of Swindon future after all, having had that that rotten hamstring injury that kept him out from October, and he's had quite a few issues with getting back to full fitness.
Yeah, and it's good to hear that he's getting there, because to have that that operation twice is not great, is it? I mean, you wouldn't wish that on anybody, and it must have taken its toll mentally as much as it's taken its toll physically. So if he's close to a return to full fitness, then that's great for him. Evidently, there's something about him that Holloway likes, sort of X factor stuff. But at the same time, he struggled to really identify a role for him when he was fit. So it's an interesting one. I think, again, this comes back to the fact that Holloway wants someone who can run at players with ball at feet, and Butterworth has the ability to do that. And there aren't that many other players within the squad who can. So they're sort of weighing up, I guess, how much money do they have in the playing budget? What is the sort of player that they're going to look for from elsewhere that might fill that role, and how do they spread the money accordingly? But I mean, players who have been released by clubs, they get paid in July by the club that's released them, unless they find a new club. So it makes sense, if they're going to be paying him, to keep an eye on him closely and to keep him as tight to the group as possible, just in case they decide that there's an offer at the end of it. So it makes sense in all aspects. Again, it's not particularly eye-catching, but it's just sensible. And I think that's the nature of this summer, is trying to do things sensibly rather than trying to do things that you know, make headlines. So it's good for him. It makes sense for the club. And we'll see whether or not he can persuade Holloway that he's got enough about him to make a difference this season, and that he's going to be back to full fitness within the next couple of months, because that's another key bit. If he's likely to be out of action till end of September or October, then it's hard to see why the club would offer a contract. But if he's pushing closer to getting back, then that makes sense. So good for him, and hopefully he continues that recovery, and hopefully, if it's not at Swindon, he finds himself a new club somewhere before the start of the season.
Yes, I guess you never forget a man dancing around an entire Accrington midfield before scoring. On a slightly sort of sadder note, I guess, you know, Harrison Minton's time with Swindon is very much up now. It sounds like he's gone to Salisbury initially to look to see if he can, you know, get some regular game time and level. He knows, and really kind of get his career going again, because, you know, Swindon have been a little bit, it has been frustrating, I think, not to get more academy products through the system until that little kind of flurry around the FA Youth Cup. And you know, there was certainly a time where they were quite hopeful he could become a regular first teamer.
Yeah, it's a shame. And he's one of those players that has been a success story for the academy, playing more than 50 times for the first team by the age of 21 is a great effort. And it represents a real a boon for the academy and for the development pathway when you have players that are capable of doing that. It's the same as Joel McGregor coming through, and it would have been the same with Beau Tanamine. And it's good to see that there has been that pathway. But I think everyone could see that he was falling down the pecking order prior to that ACL. I mean, he was obviously out on loan at Chippenham when that happened. I'm not sure that there would have necessarily been a route back for him last season as it was, but Holloway would have liked to have seen him in pre-season just to assess him, but he's got to look after himself. He's got to find an income. So best of luck to him. He will definitely be a success in the National League. So hopefully he gets that contract and can start playing regular 90s.
Yeah, perhaps working his way back up the pyramid, Tyree Shade style. Last one before we move on to matters of the trust and off the pitch. We did have our first sort of pre-season encounter with the manager on Thursday. What's your sort of takes from his kind of general demeanour and the energy he brought? He seemed to be buzzing off England's win over the Democratic Republic of Congo as much as anyone I know.
Yeah, he seems absurdly confident that England can win the thing, which, I mean, fair play, you've got to be optimistic. but I'm not sure I can share that degree of optimism with him. Over the course of the summer, he has reflected on how he and the club more widely can make the experience of following Swindon Town more inclusive, more communal, and he is actively trying to implement changes both to himself in the way that, you know, he talks about things, but also encouraging parts of the club to push for other initiatives. I think that that's very noble, and I think that it's probably worth everybody having a think before the season starts about whether we want to go into a new campaign feeling a sense of antagonism towards everybody, whether we want to have that natural detachment from the first team squad, from the manager, whether there is a need to bring that emotion into the start of a new season, as much as we can still be skeptical about elements of how the club is run. I think that there's definitely that disconnect there, even if it is not being recognised at the very top of the club. I think Holloway has recognised this. He does see a wedge. He wants to make a change, and he's trying to implement that both with what he says and what he does. Now, whether or not that extends into the season when the going gets tough, when they go on a losing run, whether he feels affronted by certain actions in the crowd, whether he feels affronted by the FA or the referees, and whether he can keep his head, that's a different matter. I think there is a good faith argument here to say that if the guy is trying to make changes and improve both himself and the club as a part of the community, then he should be given the leeway to do that, at least initially. But he does strike me as wanting to do things a bit better. Obviously, there's then the footballing side on top of that. I think that's a separate conversation. It shouldn't necessarily fall on the manager to lead on all aspects of improving the sort of status of the club within the community. But the fact that he's recognised there's an issue and is actively doing something to try to change it is honourable, and hopefully he'll be given some time and space to see things come to fruition. My fear is if there is a meagre start to the campaign, then it could get very difficult very quickly. And in that situation, best laid plans and all that, it might not quite work out. But we'll wait and see in that respect. I don't know, what did you think? He was certainly positive and he wants to be positive, but how do you feel that, do you think that will stick?
I think there's a chance. I think the thing I took from it, as well as that kind of desire to try and get some sort of community link back and group feel, was there did seem a sort of much more perhaps clarity of purpose than the end of last season, where from what he said, kind of, you know, even sort of quite openly in front of a microphone, and clearly from what you hear elsewhere, everything got a bit scrambled at the end of last season. So it felt much more kind of precise. Which is quite something, given his occasional propensity to go around many houses and come back before making the point. So perhaps we take some good signs from that as well.
Yeah, I think so. I think that for the start of a new season, it's always worth trying to let some things lie where possible, particularly around the football side, because ultimately we all want the same thing, which is to be entertained, see a team being successful, to get out of this division. And he needs to be given the chance. He's going to be the manager, as he emphatically pointed out. That was the one thing that he wasn't going to be changing, was him at the top of the club. He's there now. So is there a way that the thing can work together to try and start with a bit more positivity? I know what the reaction is from those who've made their minds up. They'll always be saying to anyone who makes this point that you shouldn't be telling me what to think and telling me what to do. And I guess to an extent I agree with that, but I don't see the mutual benefit in starting negatively before there's been anything from a footballing perspective to be negative about. But, you know, each to their own. Hopefully there is a positive start. Hopefully in pre-season we can see developing systems, and we can see a framework for success, and that people can therefore go into the season thinking there might be a positive outcome. But I think for all of us, there will always be that underlying worry of what happens if it doesn't go well.
Finally, poking around to off-pitch matters, we saw the Trust not only deliver a large quantity of minutes from joint venture meetings, those meetings which are sort of co-opted between the club and the Nigel Eady Trust and the Supporters Trust about how the ground is run and moves forward. But the Trust also, I think you can say, won a concession from the club in terms of the debentures, which are the sort of a kind of vehicle through which the club is kind of funded. Essentially, it's sort of debt put on the club, a charge put on the club. But the Trust have succeeded in taking those charges off the actual ground, as it were, that they wouldn't, that the ground couldn't sort of become liable to fund them, I guess, if suddenly a bunch of money had to be raised quickly. I'm not sure that's the most fluid explanation, but I think it's technically correct. So what do we make of the Trust actually being able to do this successfully and kind of protecting that joint venture, if you like?
I think this is a significant success for the Trust, and it also shows that there is both a purpose and a need for an organisation like the Trust, and that not only is there a need for it, that the Swindon Town Supporters Trust does remain pretty active and is doing things in the background that will be for the future good of the club, even if the things aren't necessarily all that visible, and if they aren't necessarily that combative and militant. There is a lot of a holding to account that occurs behind the scenes, which I think is a really important function of a fan organisation. In this particular instance, they have managed to successfully have the JV shares that the club holds. So they will hold 50% of the shares in a business called the County Ground Custodians Limited, which basically is the vehicle that runs the county ground ownership between the club and the Trust. Those shares had been included within these two debentures. They are now no longer included within these two debentures. And those debentures are basically securing debt against the football club. So it's the money that Glenn Morfooney and his access businesses are lending the club is secured against the club's assets. That did include the shares in the joint venture. So by extension, it included the shares in the county ground, but it no longer does. And that is entirely because the Trust recognised there was an issue, objected to it, made significant representations behind the scenes, put together a proper legal framework for making sure that the club recognised that it could not put those shares within that debenture, and then work collaboratively with the club to remove it. And whilst we can be sceptical about the club including those shares in the first place, was it just a genuine oversight? Was it something more nefarious? I don't know. I would go for the former, and it was an oversight. They have at least worked collaboratively with the Trust to ensure this gets done. It was very much a busy process early on in May, sort of dipped off a bit in June, but has now been completed and the paperwork filed to Companies House. That is a good win for the Trust, and it shows that this relationship still can produce something of substance, and the Trust itself has a value, even if it's not always seen. So I applaud the work put in there. It's all done on a voluntary basis. All of the legwork from the board and the work from the legal representatives who do this stuff pro bono, that's all really important stuff that they're giving up their time for because they believe in the protection of the football club and its assets. I think they would still be wary of there being debentures on the club at all. And obviously those debentures still exist. But at least a key element of the club's infrastructure is no longer part of those loan securities. So well done to the Trust. It's good that the club were collaborative in the end, and it's reached a positive conclusion, which, given the general malaise that the club has found itself in over the recent years, it's always good to recognise when something positive has taken place. So I don't think that this is insignificant, and we should take it as an indication of good work that's being done by good people in voluntary positions while the rest of us are watching on.
Yes, so there's that done. There's quite, I think there's a certain amount around, if you're of such mind, to dig around in the minutes of the kind of joint venture that the Trust have put up on their website, which is a further welcome exercise in having some level of understanding and accountability and the ability to nose around and try and find out interesting stuff. I think that is just about us done for this week. Some of us are gearing up the Factor 50 to go to Swindon Supermarine for the traditional pre-season curtain raiser. And it's nice to use that phrase, not in terms of the context of the Community Shield before they all head off to Spain. Reminder, your support for the Moonraker would be very much appreciated if you enjoy Sam's comments here and the tidbits of transfer and other news that he is so good at providing. You should consider subscription. And if you enjoy this podcast, there are question and answer ones done periodically, which are only available to subscribers. So perhaps those two things between you can make you invest financially in the Moonrakers reporting if you have not been kind enough to do so already.